What's going on, everyone? You're listening to the Long Island Sound Podcast, your source for everything Isles, and the only Islanders podcast to still hate John Tavares. Well, that's probably not true. Anyway, as you can tell, he's got a new narrator, me. I'm Ben, for those of you who don't know. And it's just going to be me tonight, in fact. So both of the guys, Damon and Kenny, are out, and so you're just stuck with me. We usually talk about how we're doing, so no one's here to ask me how I'm doing, but I'm excited to see how it goes, recording alone. I'm also, you know, happy about 13-game point streak. I was at both Florida games, actually. The one at the Coliseum a couple weeks ago, which was the first of the streak, and the one at the Bark on Saturday, that was hopefully the first of another streak. And at the Collie was the game where they gave out the replica rings. And so I'm wearing that right now for good luck. They've been pretty good since I got that ring, so hopefully I'm not jinxing anything. Anyway, just to give you a little quick preview as to how the show is going to go today, we're going to go over the roster moves really quickly, and then get into the natural hat trick, which I guess is more like a hat trick because I'm providing all three topics. But anyway. And then we're going to go at the end to some fan mail that we got, which is just one bit, although, you know, you've still got some time, or not when you're listening to this, you won't have time, but those who follow me on Twitter still have some time to check me out. By the way, I'm at @LISound_, so you should check me out. Anyway, so just for the quick roster moves, so I believe it was after the Pittsburgh game? No, after the Ottawa game, Wahlstrom and Bardreau were sent down. I could be wrong. Wahlstrom was sent down before, I believe, and Bardreau was sent down after, because Eberle's back, and now Komarov is back. Or maybe I had that mess. Yeah, so Wahlstrom was sent down after Pittsburgh, and I believe Bardreau was sent down after Florida. Something like that. Anyway, now Eberle's back, and Komarov is back. Koivula has been going up and down and up and down as a auxiliary guy, but they also want him to play in Bridgeport, I'm assuming. So I hope they're reimbursing him because he's been paying his entry-level deal on Metro North and the Long Island Railroad. So I really hope they're reimbursing him. But now we're going to get into the natural hat trick, the roster moves we just sort of got into. And for the natural hat trick, the first topic I want to get into is the recap of the three games. And then the second topic I want to get into is the team shuffle. You know, where should Brassard play? How's Nelson doing? Line reshuffle, Ladd going down, that kind of thing. Although I guess we should, you know, Ladd going down is roster move, so we'll just do that really quickly right now. Ladd just got sent down to the AHL, and it seems a lot of people are talking about how it was a non-Islanders move, which certainly makes sense. You know, they would in the past be paying for their guys to play just because of the number that they're making, and they're definitely sending a message that doesn't matter now, and he's going down. I mean, partly just because he's not ready after playing so long, but you know, he will have to clear waivers, and I'm sure he will with that huge cap hit. But I think part of it also is, to my mind at least, Dal Colle had maybe his best game, not just of the season, but maybe even of his NHL career against the Leafs. I thought he did a really good job. I thought it was sort of hard to get things going on the third line when he was there with Johnston and Brassard. That was kind of mixed up and didn't really work well. But specifically when he moved Dal Colle down to Cizikas and to play alongside Cizikas and Clutterbuck, where he was before, he really clicked into gear, and he's been doing really well alongside them, to filling in for Matt Martin. So I really liked him there, and I think he has definitely earned a spot over Ladd at the moment. Anyway, now, just to get into a quick recap of the games. The Penguins game started really well. I feel like I jinxed it, because on the last podcast, I just wanted the streak to go to 12, because there was Pittsburgh, and I didn't want to lose to Pittsburgh, and then I was going to the Florida game. So I'm sorry, I take full credit for that. But in the Pittsburgh game, it started really well. Cizikas scored like 19 seconds in, am I right? I just want to double check. 19 seconds in, first shift, he wins the forecheck battle, like he seemingly always does, and then Pulak gets a shot to the net, And it goes back around, and Cizikas says, you know, first one on the puck, Johnny on the spot. And it's 1-0 Islanders, and, you know, things are going great. And then the second goal was Clutterbuck from Cizikas again on the penalty kill, and that has been really good. The penalty kill has been going this year, and I know that I said maybe a couple weeks ago that it's been – there are a couple goals that were scored right after the penalty ended, and that's true. And especially in the Florida game, Greiss really came up big because Florida could have had 2 or 3 power play goals in that game. But – there's a reason that it's one of the best in the league, percentage wise. I believe it's top 10. I don't know if that changed, but it's definitely one of the best in the league. And the one thing that it hadn't done was add some shorties, and it definitely did against Pittsburgh. That was such a great goal. And if I remember correctly, they also scored a shorthanded goal against Florida. But we'll get to that game later. And I think when we talked about the penalty kill a while ago, one of the things Dame and I were talking about is that Beauvillier has been one of our best penalty killers, which is not something that you would have said a couple months ago. But I remember saying, I want to, you know, put an asterisk next to that because Cizikas was out at the time. And I think when Cizikas is back, he'll be our best penalty killer. And lo and behold, he is 100% our best penalty killer, or at least our best penalty kill skater or forward, because, you know, Greiss is really playing out of his mind, as is Varlamov. And with Cizikas coming back as the partnership with Clutterbuck, I mean, them combining for that shorty, crazy, crazy goal. And then Adam Pellick for 3-0 in the second period. This is not a guy that we associate with offense, but he's been bringing it, and even to the point where, even maybe to a fault in the Leafs game, where I'm recording this on Thursday, so last night, in the Leafs game, Pellick was even caught up on the play, and I think they scored from it, which, saying that, just, it feels weird coming out of my mouth. That's just not what Adam Pellick does, especially playing next to Ryan Pula. But then the Penguins came back, and that was not fun. And the concern was, I mean, we all know that streak I believe they're like 48-2-3 now in games where they scored 3 or more goals. Not to mention, you know, 20 minutes to not concede 3, especially, I mean, when you're any team should be, you know, basic. But when you're the Islanders, a team that obviously prides itself on defense should be, I don't want to say routine because then you get complacent, but that, you know, that should be the Islanders' bread and butter. But the Penguins got back in it. They scored, I believe, on their first or second shift in the third period, which also came after Matt Murray made one of the saves of the season on Beauvillier, who, honestly, I was thinking about it after, you know, watching the replay. If you're Beauvillier and you are in that position, and it's true that Beauvillier probably could have gotten a little bit more air under it, but I wouldn't blame it on Beauvillier. You can't explain a goaltender making that kind of save. But how do you, like, keep playing? I know you have to, it's your job. But just, I would be head and hands for me. I don't know how I'd be able to skate back in the defensive zone. But he did, although not fast enough, because the Penguins scored through McCann, and then Rust, and then Malkin, and then it went to overtime, and where the Islanders had the possession for, I believe, the first 3 minutes of overtime. The Penguins didn't even touch the puck. And you're thinking, okay, bread and butter Islanders, especially the last time the Islanders were in overtime, was Brendan Burke went into the details of the Islanders' power play, the Islanders' overtime, excuse me, and how it works and why teams underrated, and how in the Blues game, Craig Berube looked at Barzal on the bench for the first shift and was like, what? And had a look of, he was perplexed. And rightly so. I mean, that's not how most teams play on an overtime, but right as you're right, the overtime that directly after Brendan Burke was, you know, went into depth about that, you're thinking, okay, this is bread and butter Islanders power play. And I mean, Islanders overtime, excuse me, I keep saying power play. I don't know what's up with me, but it wasn't to be. The Penguins scored again in overtime. Nelson got caught behind the goal. And it was not a good look for Nelson, who has had some mixed games in not October. I obviously November, but that's the talking point, is that, you know, obviously this Brocktober and last year, he did it through the whole season, but, you know, it's the only year where he did it. And so you're starting to think, did we just give him, what, I think he got 6 years? Let me get this up. I'm stupid for not knowing this. Brock Nelson, cap hit. 6x6 for Nelson. And we're thinking, did we just give him $36 million over 6 years to play for 1 month? I really hope not. I think a couple of games is really early to say that. At this point, you want to give him the benefit of the doubt and just say it's just been a couple of games, you know, try to get back into it. But it certainly has been a tough time for him. Anyway, moving on to the Florida game. I went to this game, and it was funny that just the games that I happened to be able to go to were Florida at the Coliseum and then Florida at the Bark. And I have a weird stat, which I almost don't want to say because I don't want to jinx it, but in the Barry Trotz era, in games that I have been to, the Islanders have never lost. I really regret saying that because I'm going to go to a game, and the next one I'm going to go to, they're going to lose to, and I'm going to be beating up on myself, and you all are going to be beating up on me, and I'm just nervous, but, you know, that's life. But I was lucky to go to some amazing games last year. I was happened to be at the Chicago game where Devontae scored in overtime, and the Detroit shootout win, and a couple more. But these are my first two of the year, and Florida at 2-1, I remember tweeting, all right, I just know that the Panthers are going to tie it up and go to overtime, because almost all the games that I've been to have gone to overtime. Although I just realized that I have seen an Islanders loss in the Barry Trotz era, which means that I'm not jinxing anything, because I was at the Bruins 5-0 at the Coliseum. Yeah, okay, so I'm not jinxing anything. You guys can't get mad at me anymore. That was not a fun day. But anyway, I've, in general, had some good luck with the Islanders. And getting back to the topic that we were here to talk about, they play Florida at the Barclays Center, and it actually weirdly had been a hot sec since the last time they scored a power play goal. And that technically went on, although Barzal scored an absolute beauty just like 2 seconds after the power play ended, which is one of those, you know, who cares about the stats, because that's a power play goal. You know, the guy is just stepping onto the ice. But that was an absolute gem of a goal. He, for those of you, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it, but just being able to deke the goaltender while not passing him, I don't know if the last time I've seen that in hockey, just sending a goaltender sprawling and having the whole net to shoot at. Just an amazing goal. Seeing it from the stands was definitely a crazy moment. It almost levels in terms of goals that I've seen live. In that same Chicago game where Devontae scored the overtime winner, Barzal scored the, I can only describe it as a volley. I don't even know how you'd refer to it in hockey, or like a golf shot, out of the air. I guess Barzal just likes to score amazing goals when I'm there. Or I guess just likes to score amazing goals in general, because that was his seventh of the year. And he would score his eighth against Toronto. But one of the things that struck me again about Florida, which it ended up being a 2-1 win, was that, excuse me, the Islanders did not play their best hockey, and I think I touched on it before that Greiss was their best penalty killer. The penalty kill was not good by any means. But, you know, I guess you have, you know, your goaltender has to be your best penalty killer. I mean, Butch would love that I said that. But at the end of the day, good teams win games they don't deserve to. And I know, I don't know, some of you, I'm sure, are soccer fans or football fans, but as much as I am by no means a Liverpool fan, one of the connections I've made to the Islanders and Liverpool, who in our play in England, and they're first in the English Premier League, comfortably, early in the season, but comfortably. And that's the thing with Liverpool, is that as much as they have really good players, they often win games they don't necessarily deserve to. They're not going to destroy you. They're going to win games 2-1, and where you think, wait, they probably could have won by more than that. But at the end of the day, they don't necessarily have to be the best team to win. And they get lucky, but they, you know, they earn their luck. And watching them is sad, as I'm a Manchester United fan, a rival of Liverpool. Watching them is sad, but it makes me think of the Islanders. Because that's how they play their... With one of the stats that's in common, there's no, like, Corsi in soccer, obviously. But Liverpool's XG is not very good. And, you know, I think that kind of compares a soccer XG to, like, a Corsi. The Islanders' Corsi is they're not a Corsi team, but, you know, they win. We talk about this team being an analytics nightmare, and they are, and Liverpool are kind of the same. So enough about soccer. A couple of days later, the Maple Leafs came to the Coliseum, and we know what that means. I love how Bavillier answered the question to Shannon after the game. You know, what was it that gets you up to these Leafs fans, these Leaf games? And he was like, I think we all know what it is. We all know what it is, Bo. But it was a great game because, again, like the Panthers game, the Islanders were not the better team, especially in the first period. They came out of the first period up 2-0, and I mean, they were the best team in the second part of the first period. And definitely deservedly scored the second goal. But 10 minutes into the first period, I believe the Islanders were up 1-0. Let me just double check on that really quickly. The Islanders were... Barzal scored 15 minutes into the first period. So at 15 minutes of the first period, the Islanders were getting dominated. If you look at the shots chart, the shots are from the outside. This was Trotz hockey from a defensive standpoint. But this is exactly what I'm talking about with Liverpool and with the Panthers game, is the Islanders were not the better team in the first period. As much as they responded to Barzal scoring by picking up the pace and grabbing a second 40 seconds before the period ended, they, you know, if you take the sum of the period, they were by no means the better team. But they came out of it 2-0 up, and that's what good teams do. In the second period, the Maple Leafs tied it up really quickly, and again, like, that's what good offensive teams do. I don't want to say good teams because I guess that's sort of like a TBD for the Maple Leafs. They're, you know, not doing so hot. I think they've lost 3 straight by now, which makes me smile. But then Bavillier tacked on another one, which was always great to see. And then the Islanders put the game to bed, we thought, with Broussard. And I just want to quickly touch on Barry Trotz, because the move that he made to bring Broussard up to the second line back where he's played with Eberle out was truly just a masterstroke. Last week we talked about how it would go with Eberle back, and I thought that Broussard would go back to 3C and that he'd, you know, he'd figure it out. It was probably just a confidence thing, getting your first goal in a new team, you know, reacting to being bounced around like he was last year. And Kenny agreed, but Damon thought that he should stay because of how well that line's been doing. And, I mean, it's hard to say that Damon was proved right for a period and a half, but certainly the way it looked is that Broussard is playing really well with Nelson and Bavillier. And also, like, Josh Bailey can play with anyone. As much as he's not, I don't want to say that, obviously, he's not going to play his best hockey with Ross Johnston and Michael Dalcolle, but not Michael Dalcolle. There's the third, and Ross Johnston and Leo Komarov, that's who I'm missing. But Bailey can play with anyone. He's that good. Elite winger Josh Bailey. And, you know, you get his production on the power play, which we've seen, and his creativity, and also him being defensively responsible. So he can play on the third line. As much as calling Bailey a third line winger on the surface seems to be succumbing to all of the Bailey haters. But that's honestly not even a dig at him that he plays in the third line. It's just how the team goes. They roll 4 lines, and it's working out. So I guess go with what works, which we'll touch back on when we talk about the team shuffle, I guess. But it was also great to see Bavillier back amongst the goals. As much as in the last couple of games Bavillier hasn't been scoring, contrary to the first couple of years of his career, he has still been, you know, on the forecheck, involved. In the past, you'd look at Bavillier when he's not scoring and, you know, coming off the ice after a period, and you'd just be like, what? He was playing? But now he's involved every shift, even when he's not scoring, and now he's scoring as well. That's just what you love to see from Bavillier. And the last thing that I want to say before I move on to the second or the brace of the natural hat trick. I don't know if that's a word. I know it's a word, but I don't know if that's like how you'd say it. Or the second goal of the natural hat trick is that Barzal, 5 points in his last three games, 2 goals, 3 assists. You can't ask for anything more than that. His plus minus was he's a plus three. His shooting percentage was 30-something percent. His face-off percentage was not good. Face-off percentage was like a 30%. But, you know, no one's perfect, I guess. But 5 points in three games, that's my center. That is my top-line center. And as much as I'm kind of over it, because, you know, it's been a year, we don't need him. We don't. I'm not going to lie and say he wouldn't help, because that would just be stupid. But we don't need him. Ugh, I love this team. Anyway, to move on to the second segment, we've got, you know, team shuffle. And the first topic I want to get into is, where should Derek Brassard play? Because, you know, we talked about it a little bit before, but Brassard looks to be playing his best hockey on the right side of the second line, with Nelson and Beauvillier with that French connection. I saw a tweet that I really liked from Mitch Anderson saying that if they traded for JG Pageau, that would be such a great line. And that got me thinking of how the lines would be configured. So you'd think that you'd have Nelson Barzal beat Lee and Bailey on the top line. And then you have Beauvillier, Brassard, and Pageau on the third line. And the second line would be Nelson, Bailey, and then like take your pick. Like maybe you could throw Del Cole up there, you could throw Oliver Wahlstrom up there. In the future, Oliver Wahlstrom up there would be amazing. And then you've got your fourth line, and then you can shuffle in Komarov or Johnston, and you know, obviously while Martin's out, then it's easier to have Komarov or Johnston or Del Cole in the lineup. But that's a great lineup, and he would actually be a really good addition, I think. I've always been a fan of his since that series, the Eastern Conference Finals. A couple of years ago, I forget who they were playing, but he was so good in that series. Why can't I remember this? The Senators, just in their playoff run that year, he was amazing. A really good penalty killer, really good on the face-off dot. He can teach Barzal a few things. But anyway, he's not here right now. I got to look into a little bit of a fantasy there. But as of right now, Brassard, you know, we're going to have to figure out whether he's going to be on the third line, because I think as of right now, there's probably little doubt that he is playing his best hockey top line, second line right wing rather than 3C. The question is, are the Islanders playing their best hockey when he's at 3C versus second line right wing? And in the second half of the Leafs game, when he was at second line right wing, they were 100% playing better hockey than they did in the first half. The thing is that sustainable? Because at the end of the day, the Islanders' forward group is 16 guys, 12 guys. I can't do math, and Brassard's just a 12th of that. So if Brassard is playing better at second line right wing, but the rest of the team plays better when he's at 3C, then your decision's made for you, I think. But you know, we'll see, because I'm tempted to say keep him at second line right wing right now because of how well he's doing and how adept Josh Bailey is at playing, you know, anywhere, especially the way they finished the Leafs game, as I said before. So I think my verdict, I guess, would be as of right now that he should stay at second line right wing. So props to Damon for saying that last week. And the second thing I wanted to get into, kind of touched on this, was Brock Nelson, who needs to start playing better. I don't think he was bad against the Maple Leafs. I don't think he's been bad in general, because his line is producing. I need his scoring touch to come back, which is why I'm tempted to say that it's not November or lack of October thing, which is, I think, the verdict that I would give if you were to say, is, you know, is Brock Nelson in just a, you know, any old NHL players, you know, lost his scoring touch for a couple games drought versus it's not October anymore. I would probably say it's just a drought because Nelson is still involved in the play. He's still, you know, he's still doing fine on the penalty kill. He's still, his line is still doing stuff. Obviously, Beauvillier and Brassard have been the focal points of that, but you know, you can't have a line that's just two or three guys. The only issue that I've seen with Nelson is just that he hasn't been putting the puck in the net. And as much as that's, you know, his strong suit or one of his main strong suits, it happens to the best of them. And I think in the past, when it wasn't October, I guess, his it's not just that his goals would disappear, his play would disappear. And as much as his goals have sort of tailed off, I don't think his play has. I think he's still been in it. Sort of similar to how Beauvillier has, even when his goals weren't coming, how his performances were still there. And then the one more thing that I wanted to get into, in the team shuffle, the last little bit of the second goal, or the second part of the natural hat trick, was Devon Toews. And as much as I'm a little bit pissed off at Devon Toews for the first goal, I believe it was the Maple Leafs' first goal, where he just didn't see, I want to say it was Andreas Janssen. I want to double check that. It was Kasperi Kapanen. He just like didn't see him coming up behind him, unless it was the second goal, in which case it was Nylander. I can't remember at the moment, but he just like did not realize he was behind him, and they got a free tip, and that was that. But Devon Toews is playing out of his mind right now on the offensive side of things. We talk about it with Barzal, how when Barzal is on the ice, you take notice. And it's one of the things that is sort of universally acknowledged about Barzal, regardless of whether it's by Islanders people or just NHL people, is that he is always, when he has the puck, your eyes are glued to him. You can't look at anything else because you just assume that he's going to make something happen. And obviously Devon Toews doesn't have the silky hands that Matt Barzal does. But one of the things I've noticed is when Devon Toews has the puck, whether it's just going through the neutral zone or playing a pass and then going ahead to try and receive something, or even chasing his own dump in, you get excited when he has the puck. It sounds weird to say about a defenseman, but you do. And maybe that's just me, but I feel like next to Barzal, he's the guy that I think that about the most. And I just said it is weird to say about a defenseman, but to me at least, it's definitely the case. So that wraps up for the second part of the natural hat trick. The third part we're going to talk about, we're going to get to a little bit later. I'm just going to take a little water break. All right, I'm back, guys. So the third thing that I wanted to talk about was the Islanders' PR. And in the past, with all the teams that I've supported, but especially the Islanders, their PR has been awful. And as much as we want to, you know, we can get on the team for fans not showing up in the masses that we'd expect for a, you know, professional hockey team. Islanders' PR hasn't helped with that. They're not doing the best job of getting their fans, and especially, you know, to arenas. That shtick, we could talk for ages about that, but I think they've really taken a turn, and it's not to the same extent that some accounts have. Like in hockey, the two that come to mind are the Hurricanes and the Golden Knights. Those two are, I think, on a different pedestal to the Islanders. But when you look at the effects that those PRs have had on their teams, the Hurricanes became the bunch of jerks, and they went from being, you know, a Florida Panthers type turnout in terms of fans to selling out and, you know, having crazy celebrations and getting on Don Cherry's nerves. And and that's what you want, that in the modern era with social media, there's nothing better than that kind of publicity. Because in this context, I really believe that all publicity is good publicity. Obviously, there are times when that's not the case. Just ask Don Cherry. But when it comes to, you know, getting your name out there, there's nothing better than what the Hurricanes did, you know, coining that bunch of jerks. And it definitely fed the crowd, which fed them. And they, I feel pretty confident in saying they wouldn't have gotten to where they got last season without that PR stunt, whatever you want to call it. And the Golden Knights in the same way, with their first season in the NHL, it makes sense that one of their top priorities would be getting a PR team, because as a new team, you know, you have new guys working for you, because, you know, you weren't an organization however many years ago, or 2 years ago, I guess. Three. Anyway, with the Golden Knights, it goes from their funny tweets to their interactions at the arena, and I'm sure the Islanders will get there with Belmont, but those two teams in particular, if the Islanders even come close to taking after those two teams, which have grown their fan bases and in turn grown their success because of their PR, which I believe are 100% connected, then they're on the right track. And it's clearly they're on the right track because of Belmont, and there will 100% be better turnouts because, you know, there aren't Manhattan fans that don't go to the Coliseum because they have Barclays to go to, and vice versa on Long Island. But that's obviously part of it. But, you know, if we're going to sell out a 17,000 capacity arena, then, you know, on a regular basis, you're going to have to attract some more fans. And obviously part of doing that is success, which the Islanders have started to trend toward, which obviously you love to see. But also part of it is the PR. And the reason why I'm talking to you about this, there's been a huge introduction about PR, is that the Islanders did what I would call one of the PR moves of the year, especially of the sports teams that I follow, mostly because it's not a huge occurrence, good PR moves by the teams that I like. But, and if you're not aware of what I'm talking about right now, a couple weeks ago, I want to get, on November 5th, Damian Woody, who is a New York fan of sports that are not hockey, tweeted, like, literally NYC has two of everything in sports, and they still suck. What the hell? Now, one person got on him saying, not in hockey, and then tagged the Islanders, at NY Islanders are on a 9-game winning streak. And then he responded, can I hop on that train for my mental sanity, lol. And the Islanders responded to him, saying, we'd love to have you as part of our Isles fam. Best choice you'll ever make, just saying. And that's amazing in its own right, just getting on that and getting people who don't know you, because let's face it, hockey is not the most popular sport in America. And especially when teams like the Islanders and the Rangers haven't been good in a while, in New York City specifically, also the baseball, football, and basketball teams obviously have also been bad. But as of right now, obviously the Islanders are the best team in New York, and it's not even close. Oh, wait, the Yankees are good too. I forgot about the Yankees. Shit. The Islanders are still probably the best team in New York, and, you know, you could have that debate with me, but... I'm also a Mets fan, but anyway, if you're complaining about NYC sports, then talk about the Islanders for sure. And that's the point that they're making, and they're getting themselves out there to someone who I previously had never heard of, but he's verified. He has 103,000 followers and he works for ESPN. So just getting your name out there is the best thing you can. And this is all before they proceeded to invite him to games, give him a free ticket. And then they got him on MSG Networks. They got a deal where they gave him tickets to give out on in a giveaway, and he did an interview with Shannon Hogan at the second intermission, and that is absolutely brilliant PR. It's not as flashy as the Golden Knights tweeting something or the Hurricanes selling Bunch of Jerks merch. It's obviously not to that degree, but just basic showing people who you are. It's just basic business. And the Islanders have not been doing that enough throughout their existence. And they're doing it now, and it's amazing for the growth of their fan base. And I just wanted to talk about that because I'm not – obviously it's getting the attention because, you know, it's funny and a guy that didn't know they existed becoming an Islanders fan, and it's, you know, how much of a fan is he actually? And but that's not the point. The point is that that's using someone's name and getting them on board, and it, your success fuels your fans, and your fans fuel your success, and your success gives you more fans, and it keeps going. And that's how you become a good, not just a good team, not just a good roster, not just a good front office, which they obviously have all of those things, but a good franchise. And that starts from the bottom down, and it's 100% going with Ledecky and Malkin, with Belmont. And it goes right through the PR people, too, and they're doing an amazing job. So I just wanted to touch on that. And that wraps up the last bit of the natural hat trick, which, again, I mentioned before. I feel a little bit proud that I provided all three to the natural hat trick today. You know, going at it solo, the first time the Long Island Sad podcast has been a one-man show. And the last thing that I wanted to do before I jump out of here, I know it's only been however many minutes after editing, but it's, you know, a little bit short just with one, me, myself, and I. But the last thing that I wanted to do is we got a little bit of fan mail, or I don't want to say fan mail, a fan question, so I tweeted out. And keep on the look for these because I tweet out before most shows, I try to remember. If you have any questions, we'd love to talk about them. It's our favorite part, you know. We want to talk about what you guys want to talk about. So I tweeted out 12 hours ago, Isles Nation, at KaijuBlue13, so that's Damon's at, and I are recording the next episode of the Long Island Sound podcast tonight. I know it's a bit late. We usually record Tuesdays and release on Wednesdays, but it's 2 days late. Been a tough week, but we're getting it out there, or I'm getting it out there. Sorry to flex, Damon and Kenny. let us know if there's anything we should talk about. So Tristan Peck, so shout out to you because you live in England, and it's awesome that we have a follower in England. I saw on, because we get some of the demographics, and so some of you that listen to us are from all over the world, which is the coolest thing ever. Anyway, so Tristan said, is there a chance we keep Greif after the season, albeit on less money due to his age, and trade Sorokin for a top six scorer? All the best from England. Now, at the time, Damon was still in on tonight, and so Damon responded, great question. And I also responded saying, honestly, I don't disagree that that would be a decent idea. Also, it's never a guarantee Sorokin comes over at all. And then Damon responded to me saying, you have to have Sorokin locked up before making a decision on Greif. It's a play towards the future. If I'm Lou and I can get Sorokin for the next 5 to 10 years, I do it. And then Tristan responded to Damon, who said, great question, saying, thanks, mate. I'm looking forward to hearing the show at work tomorrow. You three are a fine listen. Thank you, Tristan. We love to hear it. And Damon said, we appreciate it, which we, of course, do. So thank you again, Tristan, and all of you other fans. But just to talk about Greif, to me, it's difficult because when you look at the success that he's had, and obviously the success that he's had with Leonard and the success that he's having with Varlamov, you're tempted to say to a higher extent the success that he's having with Barry Trotz, Mitch Korn, and Piero Greco. but it's going to be hard to see him somewhere else. I predicted a couple months ago that he's going to end up in Carolina, which I would be sad to see. I mean, just imagine Greif somewhere else, which is why it's hard, because you see this franchise goaltender in Ilya Sorokin, who, let's be honest, regardless of how good he is, at least part of the hype is that we've been expecting him for ages now. To the point where when we talked about the prospect lists before the season started, he's not a prospect anymore on the list because I think he's 24. So we've been waiting for him for so long that at least part of the hype is because of how long we've been waiting for him. Obviously, the fact that he is 100% the best goaltender outside of the NHL plays a huge factor. He's, again, tearing it up in the KHL this year. But at the same time, if he hasn't gone until this point, why would he go now? Of course, I could give you so many reasons with, you know, having the building, having Belmont sorted out, having great management and a really good goaltending coach because, you know, as of right now, it's looking like they have the best goaltending, the Islanders are the best place for a goaltender to go right now. At least it's looking like that. And you have three success stories already of three guys who weren't playing well before this regime took over. So there's obviously those advantages, but you know, with a guy like Sorokin, there's no guarantee. So I agree with Damon that first you want to see what Sorokin does. Partly because, you know, regardless of what angle you take, if you want to trade him, then you're not going to get value until you know that he's willing to come to North America and sign a contract. He's on an entry-level deal, but just come to North America. You're not going to get anything for him that his trade value, I don't think, will be high enough to be worth dealing him unless you know that he's in North America. Also, if he's going to stay on the island, then you need to know that he's coming at all, because if he's going to stay in the KHL, then it's a no-brainer. You try to get Greiss. You can, like you said, Tristan, you can probably get him for less because he's, I think, 34, 35 now. You probably won't have to get him for 3.3. I would love to, you know, look at something like a 2 years, 2.5, maybe? Like, I know that he's tearing it up. So you could maybe at the same time look at like a 1 year, $5 million, like Leonard has in Chicago. Sad face. But at the same time, like, you can totally see Sorokin filling those shoes and then some, because this team has been looking for a franchise goaltender since the dynasty years. And of course there have been good goaltenders since then, but this team, as I said, has been looking for a dynasty goaltender forever, for a franchise goaltender forever. And when those come knocking on the door, it's hard to turn it down. Of course, it also depends who you're getting in return, but I don't see the Islanders trading Sorokin in terms of what's a reality. To me, I would be hesitant, but could be convinced. It seems as though Damon is closer to not wanting to go through with it, although I don't want to take words out of his mouth. But in terms of what I think about the Islanders, I think that obviously this conversation is all bullshit unless he shows an intent to come, or unless he ends up coming to North America. But if I'm thinking about what the Islanders are probably going to do if he comes to North America, I'm betting that he stays, and at least through his entry level, or at least like the first year, and you know, you see what comes of him, is what I'd guess. So thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. You're listening to a podcast on your way to work or something. Thank you for listening, is what I meant to say. I've been Ben, or Ben Cohen, and this is the Long Island Sound podcast, and I hope you've enjoyed it. For the rest of the guys, we'll see you next week. Thanks so much, and have a good one.